Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today I have a great guest on. He's going to be talking about topics that I'm totally interested in. He's written a book called Prophecies, Challenge, and Blessings, Visions of 2012, and The Shift. So, Jack Alice, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here. And hello to everybody out there in Internet Radio Land.
Now, Jack, let's do this. Let's start off with you kind of telling people who you are, what prompted you to start your search, and then what led you to writing this last book.
Well, who am I? I'm a child of the universe, I guess, would be the best way to put that. I'm an author and a spiritual teacher, and I've been doing this. As far as why I'm writing the books that I'm doing and why I'm doing what I'm doing at this particular time, in addition to the Prophecy, Challenge, and Blessing, Visions of 2012 and The Shift, I've also got a brand new DVD out, which is entitled 2012 and The Shift, The Power of Ceremony. And I can, you know, Nancy, people ask me that question all the time, and I'm usually a little bit tongue-tied as far as how to answer it, because this is just so much the thread of who I am that I can't ever remember being anybody else. As far as the work that I'm doing, and this is basically the work that I've been called to do, and I've been on this track since I was a pretty young person. You know, this whole thing began for me as far as looking outside of the box for the truth about our world, and which subsequently led me to, you know, most of my spiritual discoveries. Began late in my teenage years, even as early as when I was, you know, a lot younger than that. So I've been on this track my whole life, and basically, I do have a spirit guide. I met my spirit guide about a year and a half ago at Deer Mountain in at a 5-day traditional Mayan spiritual ceremony up in the rugged high mountains of Northern California. And I am basically guided to transmit a message regarding these times that we're living in, these times of monumental transformation that we refer to as the shift. And I've had a very, very strong resonance with and have been very strongly influenced by indigenous sources and indigenous wisdom my whole life, not only of all of the Native American tribes, but more recently the Maya, the Hopi, and virtually all the other tribes from everywhere, tribes and nations from every continent on the planet. And basically, one of the things I learned in delving into this wisdom, to this knowledge, is that they are all telling us precisely the same thing, not only about these times in which we're living, but they're also telling us precisely the same thing about the incredible powers of our spirituality, and that this thing that we refer to as the shift, or 2012 and the shift, that this is primarily a spiritual phenomenon, a spiritual process. This is these are our spiritual times that we're living in which we all, each and every one of us, are blessed with this incredible opportunity for transformation, not only transformation for ourselves internally, but also for transformation of the world external to us. So this is a very, very blessed time that we're living in, and I am guided to transmit a message regarding these times that is a little bit more simple and less complicated than the message that we receive from so many of the other teachers in this area. Many of them tend to make it way too complicated, way too complex, and it becomes a little bit of a head game, and it becomes kind of scary for a lot of people in terms of, you know, they're not quite sure what they're hearing, and they hear all this end-of-the-world doomsday stuff, and, you know, and then pretty soon people are hearing things they don't need to hear, and this whole thing we're talking about turns into something that it isn't, actually. So I know that's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but this is basically just my calling. I've been on this track my whole life, and that's pretty much it.
You know, growing up, Jack, you did a lot of research, even as a youngster, basically, because, you know, from what I read in your book, you came basically into this world with a lot of questions that didn't really start to come out until you were probably, like you said, in your teens. But even with that, you were very uncomfortable with what you were looking at, with the world and what was going on and how people were reacting and what people were doing. So, you know, you probably, without a doubt, have been reincarnated several times to try to bring this wisdom through. Why do you think people are having such a hard time, Jack, letting their own wisdom, their own knowledge, their own, let's just call it wandering minds, really kick in so that they can really openly look around and say this isn't a doom and gloom time. It is a time to grow. Why do people have this hard time wanting to do that?
Well, I think there's two answers to that. There's probably more than two answers to that question, but two of them pop right into my head. Let me just give you the two answers, and then maybe we can elaborate upon them a little bit. One is the fact that people have a very, very difficult time with change. And that's one of the reasons why people are so frightened by this time that we're living in, because this time is basically a time of monumentally huge change. And people just basically don't like change. They want things to stay the way they are. They want to stay in the little box that they've been, you know, kind of painted into, and they don't want anything to change, and they want all their goodies to stay the way that they are, and just want to keep going, you know, want to keep going in that way. So that's one reason for it. Another reason for it kind of launches us off into a whole other area of this topic and of these topics, but we got to get it out there because it is an important part of this. And that has to do with the fact that one of the reasons that people are so resist so much, you know, leaving that little box that we talked about a second ago, and why they resist, you know, the broadening of their minds and the broadening of their spiritual powers, is because there's an awful lot of deceit and manipulation in our world today, and a lot of that deceit and manipulation is aimed at us human beings. We see it with our crazy culture that we live in, and I hope I'm not, you know, scooping anybody here by saying, you know, this civilization that we're living in, this Western civilized world that's been around now for, what, about 6,000 years or so, starting in Babylon and culminating in the present time. This Western civilized world is a world that that has basically been on the wrong track for a very, very long time now. And one of the aspects of this is the fact that that there is a lot of deceit and a lot of manipulation in our world that is geared to knocking us human beings off of our course. And by off of our course, I mean off of our course as far as reaching our full potential, off our course as far as reaching our, you know, full, you know, multidimensional potential as spiritual beings. Because when we discover that part of ourselves, we become very, very empowered. And under those circumstances, when we become so empowered, that we wouldn't put up with a lot of the nonsense that is perpetrated upon us by, you know, the behind-the-scenes powers that own and control the world. So, you know, we can see it. You know, the best example of it is just our television sets, in terms of the massive amounts of brainwashing that comes shooting out of our TV set each and every time we turn it on. And the message is always the same. The message that we, the viewers, are just a bunch of helpless schmucks who you know, we need all these pills that they're peddling to us and all these things to help us to be happy, because there's no way we can do it on our own. You know, we're just too stupid and we're just too helpless, and so we need all these pharmaceuticals and we need all these, you know, weight reduction programs and all this other stuff, you know, to help us to be happy, because you know, there's no way we can do it for ourselves. And a lot of this brainwashing, a lot of this deceit and manipulation is very, very powerful. And it's one very important aspect of the illusion that passes for our old paradigm world. So there's two answers to your question. One has to do with the fact that we are being fiddled with, you know, by our alleged masters who are, you know, running the show. And the other is, and I think just for the sake of elaborating a little bit more upon what I said a second ago, has to do with the fact that people really resist transformation. They tend to resist change. They want to, you know, stay in their comfort zone and stay the way that they are. And that is something that is not going to work in today's world. And one of the messages that I continue to get out there is that the way to navigate these shifting times that we're living in, there's only one way to navigate these shifting times, and that is to embrace this transformation, not only to embrace it internally, but to embrace it externally and to flow with it as opposed to fighting it, because that's the only way to make it through, and that's the only way to flourish in these times. And if we resist and if we cling to our old paradigm world, which is kind of coming to an end, basically, is what that's all about. If we cling to that world, if we cling to that old paradigm world, which is a dying world, it's basically going to be a very, very rough time for those people who do. For those people who don't, for those people who are flowing with this transformation and embracing this transformation, we see amazing things happening. People are flowering. People are just discovering aspects of themselves that they never knew were there, and amazing things are happening for those people who are flowing with this and embracing it with joy and with love. But for those people who are fighting it, they're in for a rough time. So, two answers to your question.
Jack, how do you think we can help these children who really already have this knowledge and are here today to help us learn this knowledge, but yet, just like you mentioned earlier, this is one of the biggest pill-popping countries ever, and so they constantly continue to drug these children, label them with ADD, ADHD, problem children, you know, things like that. How can we help the children? Because really, as we do this shift, the children, in my opinion, are one of the biggest and most important part of this whole shift that's going to happen, and to actually make it a success for everybody that does the shift. So how can we help the children and you know, get them off of, you know, the labeling of ADD and that? How can we do that?
Well, we basically are doing it for them, are we not? I mean, we're doing this for the next generation. I mean, I'm an old man. I'm not going to be around that much longer. So we're basically doing this for the next generation, and we're doing this, you know, we're doing this for our beloved planet. So that next generation is exceedingly important. And again, in answer to your question, a couple things just pop into my head as far as multiple answers to your question. But the first one that pops into my head is, and I think this is probably the most important aspect of it, is we as human beings need to reassume complete responsibility for our own lives. That's part of the new paradigm world will be a world in which we as human beings are once again taking responsibility for ourselves, as opposed to abdicating that responsibility and, you know, letting someone else, you know, take care of us from cradle to grave, which they're more than happy to do if we give up that freedom and if we relinquish that responsibility. But one of the most important aspects of us as human beings taking full responsibility for our own lives, again, comes back to taking full responsibility for the parenting of our own children, you know, rather than relinquishing this responsibility to public school systems and to government school systems and those sorts of things. In other words, one of the aspects of the brainwashing that's so pervasive in our world is people have come to believe that, you know, when their kids hit a certain age, it's necessary for them to kind of just turn them over to the government and let the government raise them from now on. And parents are becoming less and less involved in their own children's lives, and it is to the detriment of their children, because trust me, those institutions do not have our best interest at heart. So the part that parents play in terms of, you know, reassuming complete responsibility for parenting their own children, that's probably thing number one. And then thing number two, you know, once we assume responsibility for parenting our own children, the best thing that we can do for our kids then, you know, once we reestablish that primary bond with them that so many parents have been more than happy to abdicate, one of the most important things then that we can do for our children, and one of the most important ways that our children learn from us, you know, our children don't learn from us, and this applies for kids virtually of all ages. They don't learn from us from the lectures we give them or from the words we speak or you know, from all of the, you know, the teachings that we do. They don't learn from that. Kids primarily learn from their parents as a function of the example that their parents set. And so it's up to us as parents, again, to be the best possible, you know, human beings that we can possibly be, to get our own priorities in life straight as far as putting our spirituality first and putting everything else, you know, in a backseat behind that, living our lives in a balanced way, in a happy way, in a joyous way, in a reverent way. And on that basis, and treating our children like they matter, like they're important. You know, for so many parents in our world today, their children have become, you know, nothing other than objects that are there for the purpose of you know, fulfilling the parents' wishes or whatever. And we need to treat children like they're important. We need to basically, as far as a lot of these gifted children are concerned, we just need to let them be, let them flow with their own energies, let them learn at their own pace. And set the proper example, you know, be the kind of person that we want our kids to grow up to be. And that's how kids learn. Kids learn from, you know, not only from their parents, but also from their extended family and their extended community. They learn from having the right kind of role models in their lives. And that's a very, very important thing. So the best thing you or I can do for our children, or to do for the children of the next generation, is just simply to set that example for them. And you know, I endeavor to do that every day, you know, with my own lifestyle, in terms of I endeavor to live properly, to live correctly, to live in a balanced way, and to live in a spiritual way. And in that way, I'm not only setting an example for the things I'm talking about for kids, but also for adults. This isn't just talk, Nancy. As far as you know, we're not just talking about these things. It's necessary for us, to really to live these things and to live these things with every fiber of our beings. It's probably more important that we live these things than talk about them. Even though people listening to me probably can figure it out pretty quickly that I like to talk pretty much, and sometimes you just need to stuff a sock in my mouth. So, but anyway, I hope that answers your question about what can we do for the next generation.
Yeah, and I think it's very important because one of the things that I'm doing, I don't know if you know this, Jack, is that I actually moved from Chicago about 2 years ago. It'll be 2 years next month to come to New Mexico to find land, find funding, build a school, open it, and run it. And within 6 to 9 months, I had 22.59 acres of land donated to me to build the school of now on, which is a school that is designed to help these children to be who they are and let them learn how they need to learn with other children and let them see all they, what they can do. And so that's my big thing I'm doing. And so I have a lot of stuff going on with that. But
there's a nice
little
piece of manifesting in there too, in terms of, just when you're setting out to do this, all of a sudden, lo and behold, this land is donated to you for that purpose. That's how manifestation works. Very often it seems like a miracle, but if we've got our vision clear in terms of what we're doing and what it's all about, and if our connection with spirit is intact, spirit will cooperate. Spirit will help, and spirit helped you with that little donation of land.
Big time! Uh-huh. But see, I'm very focused. That was my one intention to come down here and do that, because I had a very great business going on for 38 years in Chicago, and all I did was extend it down here. But that was my sole purpose to come down here. Uh-huh. And I was basically directed to do that. So on my way down here, I just said, hey, look, you want me down here to do this? And hey, babes, you're going to have to help me out. So that's what they've done. And people can do that. And I don't think, Jack, that people understand that they have that ability, they have that power, if they just use it. Because, we have lost it. And that's one thing that this whole shift, in my opinion, should be bringing back. But I really don't believe that everybody is going to be able to make this shift. And I think, like you said earlier, the ones who are going with the flow will have a much easier time. And hopefully more people will wake up with that. Now, in your book, let's talk about your book a little bit, because I found it very interesting. The name of the book is called Prophecy, Challenge, and Blessing, Visions of 2012 and the Shift. I found it very interesting that you put your last chapter first. So I read a lot of books because I interview a lot of people who write these books. And from what I was told, most people don't read people's books, but I do. So I found it very interesting. And I'd like you to explain to the listeners why you did that.
It was very hard for me to finish writing this book. And it just kind of it started growing and started just kind of taking a life of its own. I kind of felt after a while like it was writing me rather than me writing it. But I basically did that because I am very much the embodiment of everything that I talk about in everything you hear me talking about as far as the shift and all the spirituality. I am the embodiment of that. As the embodiment of this, the change that's occurring in my own personal life is just happening at such an exponential, at a rate of acceleration that is just so exponential. I can't even put numbers on it in terms of the change is just happening so fast. And I'm talking about my own personal change and the things that I'm doing and those sorts of things. And I found that I'd finish writing a chapter, and I'd go back and I'd read the earlier chapters that the book began with, and it wasn't me anymore. I just wasn't that person anymore. The tone of it was different. It was kind of a little bit stiffer, and even some of the content. Really not as much of the content, but just pretty more the tone. It just wasn't me anymore. And I was learning so many new things, too, that I needed to interject in there. So I finally decided to remedy the problem by writing a final chapter and then placing it first. And I made it real clear to my readers that I was doing that. And then, even that wasn't good enough. Then I went and I got to my third chapter. Then I said, well, I'm going to have to. And I pretty much had to rewrite that one too. So there's another late chapter being interjected earlier into the book. Mm-hmm. Basically, just as a function of how quickly we're changing in my life, how much I was learning kind of on the fly, and I decided also that because I was so much the embodiment of the things that I was writing about, I decided to take a little bit less of an academic tone to the whole thing. You know, and as opposed to viewing it as an academic project where we're talking about, you know, what is the shift, you know, from, you know, using science for, you know, for our evidence in terms of demonstrating what's happening. I decided to start to self-disclosing a little bit more, talking a little bit more about my own life, because my own life was such a wonderful illustration of all the things I was writing about. So I think that begins to answer your question a little bit. It was basically out of necessity. I had to, in order to, just to kind of catch up with myself, I needed to write that last chapter and place it first. And I finally did. I finally did ultimately catch up with myself. I think by the time I got to about chapter four, I started reading chapter four, and I went, yeah, okay, this has got a nice rhythm to it. This feels like me. All right, good. So it did. I finally did get caught up, but it is a wondrous adventure. This thing called life right now, and I hope the book. Embodies that.
Well, I actually found it very interesting, but you got to understand something. I have believed in what your book is saying for as long as I can remember.
Uh-huh.
You know, as long as I can remember, since I was like 6 years old, and I'm going to be 63 in July, so a very long time, okay?
Uh-huh.
But I found it very interesting because I did a lot of the same searching that you did. I just kind of did it a little differently because, you know, I just question a lot of things, but I always have my spirit guides talking to me, telling me what I should do, what I shouldn't do, whether I want to listen to them or not. It's my own choice. But, mm-hmm. you know, they were always there helping me through things because I had many, many questions, but I didn't have really anybody to answer them for me other than, you know, my guides that would come through. But they also protected me so I did not go out and have people think I was weird, strange, or crazy during my whole life. You know, so, I mean, some of the things that you write about in your story actually was some of the things that I had also gone through at, you know, at different times of my life. But
mm-hmm.
One thing that you talk about in your book that I think we really need to talk about is the self-sustaining communities, because, you know, we look around at this earth and we're basically destroying it with all the things we're doing. People call this progress. I call it deprogress, always have, okay? But people look at me like I'm weird, and that's okay. But you talk about, you know, the sustainability for communities. Let's go into that a little bit, because I really don't think people understand this, and I think they're going to have to. So let's talk about it.
Okay. Well, one of the points I made in the first chapter of the book is that, and this where, you know, this topic really, in many ways, is a very, very big topic. And by big topic, I mean it's big in terms of the kind of change and transformation that we're talking about here. But I referred to both a worldly part of this as well as an otherworldly part of this, because when we talk about the shift, very often, you know, we talk about, you know, dimensional shifts, and we talk about, you know, raising the frequency of our dimension and shifting from a third dimension to a fifth dimension. So, you know, and that certainly is, and I believe that that's a valid part of this, and I do believe that that is part of this, you know, a very important part of the shift is this dimensional shifting from lower dimensions to higher dimensions. But, however, it may not all start there, because there are other things going on here, too, and that's what I refer to as kind of an otherworldly aspect of this whole issue. In other words, we're not talking about this world anymore. We're talking about ascending, you know, to a world that's so different. It's not even this world anymore. But there's also a worldly part of this, as in an earthly part of this, and that's where the importance of sustainable communities comes in. And when we talk about sustainable communities again, we're talking again about what we talked about a little bit earlier. We're talking about this whole thing about again, reassuming, taking complete responsibility for ourselves in terms of learning once again how to take care of ourselves. And by how to take care of ourselves, this gets really basic in terms of, you know, how to grow our own food, how to find our own sources of water, how to provide our own sources of energy, you know, heat and shelter, and all those kinds of things. Also, another very important aspect of this, of the importance of sustainable communities, has to do with there are many different people who are, you know, writing and theorizing about the shift and what it means and those kinds of things. And I think one of the biggest differences between two factions who study this and who put out the ideas on this are There are those who tend to look at kind of a soft landing to this whole thing as far as the end of the old paradigm. And there are those who see it more as a rough landing in terms of a lot of the New Agers. They don't talk much about the old paradigm. They just talk very vaguely about, you know, creating a heaven on earth and that kind of stuff. And you really don't know what the heck they're talking about. But if we really are to understand the shift and what's involved here, you know, one of the aspects of this, and again, this is something our indigenous wisdom and our indigenous prophecies have been telling us for a long, long, long time. And that is one feature of the shift is this ending of one world. You know, we're at the end of the cycle. Mm-hmm. When you reach the end of the cycle, you reach a time where, you know, one world's going to come to its inevitable end, you know, creating the opportunity to create a new world from that. And the world that's coming to an end that we're talking about is our old paradigm world. And again, this is something that frightens a lot of people because basically they've been conditioned to believe that the old paradigm world is the world of their dreams, and that's the world that they had everything invested in, both material things as well as emotional things. So people resist that, and the ending of that world frightens people. But what people need to understand is that this world is an unsustainable world. There's no way that this world can survive. Again, the indigenous wisdom has been telling us this for hundreds of years. There's no way that this world can survive because it's built upon a very faulty foundation. It's built upon the foundation, first of all, of placing our primary emphasis in life upon matter or materialism or material things, accumulating material things. And then secondly, it's based upon something that totally violates all divine law, and that is it's based upon controlling the forces of nature as opposed to flowing with the forces of nature or being in harmony with the forces of nature. And this foundation that this world is built upon is the reason why this world cannot possibly survive. And we see this happening in our world today, that basically this old paradigm world is coming apart. We can see this happening on a wide variety of ways. Virtually every day we can see another aspect of this. Now, I maintain, and many people like me maintain, that this is a good thing. This is a blessing because, you know, this world is not working. It basically is, you know, as you said a minute ago, it's responsible for, you know, poisoning the soil, poisoning the air, poisoning the water, and basically poisoning our environment so that we as human beings aren't going to be able to live in this environment anymore. We're basically killing, this world is basically killing us as humans. And we can see that in all the epidemic, you know, sickness in our world today with, you know, cancer and, you know, heart disease, all the epidemic, the drug addiction, all the epidemic sickness that is just so rampant in our world. That's a very, very important part of, you know, this world coming to its inevitable end. But I mean, this could happen a lot of different ways in terms of, you know, the actual ending of it, I don't think we need to go into the various, you know, all the various possibilities of this, but there's a very, very good possibility that our system of money could go, and there's a very, very good possibility that our system of infrastructure involving our system of energy could pop at some point in terms of and just not be able to sustain itself anymore. Under those circumstances, it's necessary for we as people to begin to, you know, here's where our ideas about sustainable communities begin to enter the mix, because at those times, when those things happen, it's necessary for us to be prepared, and it's necessary for us to continue to sustain ourselves, you know, by virtue of, you know, having at least begun to take the steps to build sustainable communities. And I know that I'm currently involved with a couple of those, and there are several in several different places, around not only this country but other countries. But I'm currently involved with a Mayan elder by the name of Eric Gonzalez, formed a group called Earth Peoples United, and they are building, and that's the group that I went and visited and where I was introduced to my spirit guide at the 5-day Mayan spiritual ceremony. They are building a sustainable community in the mountains of Northern California, and they're also building another one on Lake Atitlan in Guatemala. And and essentially this amounts to, you know, taking steps to grow our own food and to have our own source of seeds and to have our own source of water so that, you know, when things start to go in the outside world, you know, there will be communities of us that will be able to sustain ourselves at that point and be able to, you know, to keep on going. And once we reestablish ourselves, you know, here on this planet, you know, here on planet Earth, then those become our, those become our centers, if you will, where we can then begin to focus on this other dimensional aspect of the shift, you know, this ascending from a lower dimension to higher dimension aspect of this. Then once we learn how to be sustainable here on Mother Earth, then we can begin to take advantage of these portals that are opening up at this time, that are opening to this dimensional shift or dimensional ascension that we talk about. So it all comes back to taking responsibility, and this can take a lot of different forms. People, in hearing what I'm saying right now, they don't need to panic about this because they haven't taken the appropriate steps. Taking responsibility begins with, I know there are many people who listen to these kinds of discussions who might be stuck in a mainstream job, and you know, they need the money, they need the paycheck, they're not just prepared to do the things I'm talking about at this point. That's totally fine. It's completely okay. What those people need to know, though, is that they can begin to free themselves, and they can begin to, you know, to be more sustainable, even within the context of, you know, keeping their job and keeping their paycheck. And they can do this by virtue of, you know, beginning to take steps to take responsibility for themselves in other ways. And they can also begin to do it by beginning to free themselves as far as freeing up their heart, freeing up their spirit, you know, freeing up their totality, you know, the totality of themselves, so that, you know, when the time comes when they can leave that job and they can leave that money and go look at alternatives, that they'll be prepared, you know, spiritually, and they'll be prepared mentally and spiritually to be able to do those things. And I like to suggest that people begin to think about you know, trying to get out of the mainstream system in as many ways as we possibly can, and just beginning to do those things for ourselves that the system currently does for us. And very often those incremental steps in that can be things like, you know, taking responsibility for our own health, you know, in terms of you know, the types of preventive health, and, you know, not going to the mainstream doctors anymore and not taking their medications anymore and going to alternative healers, those sorts of things. We can begin to take responsibility for ourselves in a bunch of other ways too, in terms of just, you know, getting the ball rolling. People don't need to be all that concerned about a lot of these time frames and predictions and stuff. December 21st, 2012 is not necessarily, you know, the end point, or is not necessarily, you know, the deadline in all this. I mean, there's every likelihood. We know that the shift is a process. We know it's started. You know, we're in the midst of it. And there's every likelihood that this process called the shift could continue on, you know, after this date that's been, you know, that's been targeted as such a prediction date. You know, there's every chance that it could go on for another year or two or five. I don't know. I don't know about any of this as far as the particulars are concerned. But it is necessary for us to begin to prepare ourselves, not only practically prepare ourselves, but also spiritually prepare ourselves. And it's probably most important for us to prepare ourselves spiritually, because that's where our primary power lies, in that arena. And once we take care of the spiritual part, the rest of the parts tend to take care of themselves rather easily.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people, Jack, are talking about 2012, and I look at them, I kind of laugh, and I say, 2012, man, we're already starting this. We've been starting it for at least almost 2 years now. So 2012 really isn't the thing. But, you know, what's happening is, again, the media, other, you know, quote, new agers, they're all going, oh, God, the world's going to come to an end in 2012. And see, and I know that it's not going to come to an end, at least, you know, the world isn't. But the world as we know it is already shifting, and that's where people are losing out, because they're not willing to make this shift. But as far as December 21st, 2012, even the Mayans, you know, that I have talked to, they say, you know, it's just a date that we did what we did, you know,
right,
many, many thousands of years ago. It doesn't mean that it has to come to an end, but it's the way that you, talking about us people, white folks, let's just say, are interpreting what has been told, you know. And And my thought is, if people would just stop worrying about 2012, just like you said in your book, and really concentrate on the only day that matters is now, then they could do this shift, and there probably wouldn't be a really big, hard time with it. But again, they're used to listening to people tell them, oh, this is going to be terrible, you know, it's all going to come to an end, everybody's going to die, you know, and it's all just blown apart like that. And I think people really need to get back into their own heart, their own spirit, their own soul, and know that that's not really what's going to be going on.
Right. And not fall into the trap of waiting for something that's going to happen, you know, to us in the future, because that's not the whole. That's not the way this thing works. You know, this is something that this whole shift, this whole transformation, is something that, you know, we human beings play a critically important part in this. You know, we are basically very, very important players in this, and so it's necessary for us to, you know, to see it that way. In terms of, we need to make this happen. This is not something that's going to happen to us. We need to make this happen. So those people who are waiting, you know, for something to happen at a certain date in the future, where, you know, where something's just going to happen to us, are really missing the boat as far as how this whole thing works, because there's nothing to wait for, you know. And like you just said, it's time to get to work, and it's time to get to work, you know, now.
Yeah, and they got to do what they need to do. You know, that's the thing. And like you've been talking about, no one can really do it for you. It just doesn't work like that,
mm-mm.
You know. And so people have got to start taking the responsibility, not be afraid that they may not do it exactly right, you know, because that's what people are afraid of. If I take responsibility, what if I screw up? Well, you know, at least you learn that way. But people need to start taking this responsibility. They need to start looking at what we have done, you know, because I tell everybody that Mother Earth is tired of what we're doing to it. And yes, it's going to shed itself of excess debris, which it does every 26,000 years or so. And, you know, it needs to do that in order for the planet to survive. And so we need to go backwards in time and start caring about Mother Earth again and what we're doing to it. You know, like I said earlier, everybody calls this progress. To me, this is total deprogress, and it needs to change. Now, in your book, you also talk about how to create the vibrations, because everybody's wondering, well, you know, what are they talking about? You know, they talk about vibrations. They talk about shifting from the third dimension to the fifth dimension. What is that? So maybe explain that a little bit to the listeners, if you can.
Okay. Well, we are one of the things that, this is something that we know, again, from a lot of different sources. And one of the wonderful things about quantum physics is quantum physics was such a wonderful way of reminding us of something that spiritual traditions and shamanic traditions have been telling us, again, for thousands of years. And all of a sudden, quantum physics comes along and tells us precisely the same thing. That's a nice little, you know, you don't have to be, you know, hit over the head by that hammer too many times, you know, to get what's being said here. We as human beings, along with everything else in this beautiful universe of ours, we are at base energy. We are quivering, pulsating energy, and all of the, you know, basically we are part of the what's called the quantum field. We're part of these vast field or fields of energy, and everything in these fields of energy is connected with everything else. It's just a vast spider web of luminous pulsating energy fibers, basically. And we as human beings are part of that energy. And when we talk about our spirituality, it's really helpful to understand our spirituality, to talk about it energetically. In other words, when we talk about spirituality, we're talking about energetically transcending, if you will, our physical bodies or this physical world. The world that we refer to as the third dimension is the dimension of matter or materialism. And this is a dimension, this is a world that is very, very heavy. It's very, very heavy. It's very, very dense. But that's the nature of matter. That's the way matter is. You know, when we study matter from a quantum point of view, we see that when the frequency of this matter increases the frequency of its vibration, at that point, the energy ceases to be in a material form, and it rises energetically and becomes more, you know, more pure energy, as in light, and as in different frequencies of light, and those sorts of things. So we actually have a transposing of material things into non-material things as a function of changing the frequency of its vibration. And we as human beings also, this is probably the real kernel of meaning as far as spirituality is concerned. We as human beings also have the capability to change the frequency of our energy. We have the capability to change the frequency of our energy. And one of our primary tools of doing this is basically our emotions, because our emotions are very, very connected to this energetic aspect of things. Our emotions are basically energy streams that are flowing along the pathways of our body. That's basically what emotions are. We do, in spite of what many of the doctors and what many of the people in the old paradigm system would like us to think, we as human beings do have the capability to learn how to control our emotions. And that's basically one of our primary tasks as spiritual people, is to learn how to do that, and is to learn how to live our life with certain emotions. And these are certain emotions which raise our frequency energetically. In other words, it raises our energetic frequency, raises our vibration, raises our energetic frequency. And it, when we succeed at doing that, it's in those states, kind of out-of-body states or transpersonal states, it's in those kind of states where we have the capability of connecting with the spirit world. And the spirit world, as I understand it, and I know I'm kind of dealing with this in kind of almost a crudely scientific way, but I do this for the purpose of making a point. My understanding of the spiritual world is that the spiritual world are basically worlds of higher frequency energy. So when we raise the frequency of our energy as humans, we're able to connect with or commune with, you know, those higher frequency realms of spirit. And it's in those ways that the spirit world is able to communicate with us. It's in those ways that they're able to communicate with us, again, energetically. These aren't always things that we you know, hear in our heads or anything like that as far as words or anything, but these certainly are things that we can feel in our bodies. And specifically, the way that we raise our energetic frequency, now I'm going to get real specific about the specific emotions involved here. And any spiritual training, any spiritual teaching that anybody who's listening to this ever undertakes should always have learning to experience life with these emotions as their goal. Because this really is the key to raising our frequency, and it's the key to connecting with spirit, which is the same as you know, raising dimensionally from this heavy third dimension to higher, more spiritual dimensions. The specific emotions we're talking about that it's necessary to experience our life with, and this is something that virtually every spiritual tradition on earth has agreed about what I'm about to say for thousands and thousands of years. In order for us to raise the frequency of our energy, it's necessary for us to experience life with feelings of peacefulness, joy, reverence, gratitude, and trust. I'm going to say that again, because that's a mantra that I probably say 50 times a day, and I say it every time I pray, and that's how important it is. We raise the frequency of our vibration energetically by experiencing life with feelings of peacefulness. By peacefulness, we mean relaxation. There's nothing, you know, when you talk about spiritual ascension and all this stuff, and it all sounds so wild and crazy and abstract. Every important spiritual teaching ever in the history of the planet has always begun with relaxation. They all begin with breathing. Each and every single one of them, they begin with breathing. They begin with relaxation, you know, meditation-like things, and learning how to relax ourselves on that basis. There's nothing more important than raising our frequency than learning how to relax. And when you look at our world today, it's becoming, you know, more and more unrelaxed all the time as far as the pace of it and how, you know, tense and anxious everybody is. Feelings of joy is another one. And very often, you know, when we learn how to relax and when we start making a lot of these connections, the feeling of joy is just something that just happens automatically. All of a sudden we find that we're happier, you know, as a function of doing the things that we're talking about. Reverence, basically being reverence for this, for life, you know, reverence for being a part of this creation, you know, reverence for the divine spirit. Gratitude for all those same things. And gratitude also, gratitude is something that we can say with our words. You know, we can say, you know, thank you, spirit, for all the blessings of this world. But gratitude is also a vibration. Gratitude is a feeling. It's a way, it's a lifestyle. You know, once we truly become, you know, metaphysically grateful, you know, for being a part of this spectacular creation, living with the feeling of gratitude, again, just becomes a part of who and what we are as human beings. It's just the way we are. We live with feelings of gratitude. And the final one is feelings of trust. And I'm going to get back to what you were kind of alluding to a little while ago. Because by trust here, I mean basically trust in spirit. And this really is the hub of the whole thing. What I mean by trust in spirit is we trust that if we are living with the proper vibration, and we trust that if we're living with a vibration that, you know, connects us with spirit, connects us with our spirit guide, when we're living with that vibration, we trust that spirit will take care of absolutely everything that we need in this world. That's how manifestation works. It works by, and that some of the recent teachings on manifestation really have been so far off as far as this very, very divine and sacred concept, like the DVD, The Secret, really missed the boat as far as, you know, the true meaning of manifestation. Manifestation begins with living with the proper vibration and, you know, connecting with spirit, with our vibration. And in doing that, we're living up to our part of the deal. And as long as we live up to our part of the deal, spirit will take care, will live up to its part of the deal, and spirit will provide absolutely everything that we need in this world. And the indigenous people learned that lesson for thousands and thousands of years. They were living, you know, in harmony with spirit. They were living totally sustainably. Mother Earth was providing for all of their needs. They had a very much simpler life than what we have, but that's the way sustainable living is going to go, I have a feeling. And yet Mother Earth and the forces of nature took care of all of their needs, and so it's like a deal. So I hope that answers a little bit the question about, you know, raising our frequency and dimensions and how we do all this and that kind of stuff.
Oh, it does. Now, the other part that is happening now, and will probably continue to happen for a while, is, Jack, there's more and more UFO sightings going on all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And yet our government and a lot of other governments think that they still need to keep this covered up. So why do you think there are so many UFO sightings coming in now? And where do you think that's going to end up going, say, after 2012?
Well, I think, you know, one thing that I think people need to hear about the relationship between UFOs and the shift is a lot of people think that, you know, that the ETs are going to swoop down and they're going to, you know, take us all away in their ships to a better world or something. I really don't think that's the way it's going to happen. Now, that doesn't mean that our extraterrestrial friends and our star beings, that doesn't mean that they aren't involved in this, and that doesn't mean that they're not watching very closely, because I believe that they are. These are basically our celestial relatives, basically, we're talking about, and in many ways, these are our true relatives in many ways, and we could get into that, we could get into that part of it too. But I think that one of the primary reasons that people are having so many more UFO sightings doesn't have to do as much with the presence of more UFOs. It has more to do with the fact that so many people are, you know, waking up, you know, to the truth about our world and expanding their consciousness. Because it is in those states that people are always the most likely, you know, to have any kind of other dimensional experience, whether it be an extraterrestrial or whether it be, you know, some other kind of other dimensional experience. We always increase the probability of those things, you know, when we are, you know, fully awakened, as far as, you know, being awakened, you know, to the truth about our world, as well as in higher states of consciousness. And certainly that is when extraterrestrials also tend to reach out to us more, you know, for connection and for contact. Because, you know, the way that we were brought up in this world and the way that the masses of people are in this world, they're just so, you know, dumbed down and numbed out and just kind of completely in a state of sensory kind of deadness, that certainly isn't an optimal state, you know, for a being of higher intelligence, you know, to try to make some sort of contact, because, you know, the door is kind of closed there. So once people, you know, begin to open those doors, and we, you know, we open those doors with our consciousness, and we open those doors just by coming alive. You know, once people start to open those doors, then more and more of those contacts are made. And I think that's primarily, I think that's why there are so many more sightings these days. I think one other thing, Nancy, the whole topic of UFOs and ETs is such a huge topic. We could spend the whole hour just talking about that alone. But I think that another part about extraterrestrials that people need to always remember is that when we talk about extraterrestrials, they're in this world too, just like in our world, there are good guys and bad guys. You know, there are what we call refer to as positive ETs, and then there are what we refer to as negative ETs. And negative ETs are the ones that really are the ones that have these collusions, you know, with our government. You know, any extraterrestrial that would collude with our government over anything, you know, has got to understand that they're not dealing with, you know, that they're dealing with some pretty malevolent entities here. So, however, the positive ETs, and this is just like on Star Trek, the positive ETs are bound by divine law, and divine law says you don't go messing around with the autonomous affairs of other worlds. You know, you let other worlds work out their own autonomous affairs, and you don't tinker with that, and you don't meddle with that. Well, unfortunately, the negative ETs don't play by those rules, and they've been tinkering with the planet Earth for many, you know, thousands and hundreds of thousands of years. Now, they've been here a long time. And the positive ETs are much less meddlesome, but that doesn't mean that they don't endeavor to communicate with us in other ways. But they communicate with us in such so much less of a non-interfering way. It's a very kind of benign communication. It's just kind of like, you know, hello, we're here, kind of thing. So that's another part of this that people need to keep in mind. You know, one side's playing by the rules and the other side isn't, and that's why one side tends to be a little bit more visible than the other side. But that doesn't mean that the positive ETs aren't connecting with us with many of us in many ways because they are.
Well, there are a lot of hybrids here on Earth as we speak, and more to come. And I don't think a lot of people understand that.
Well, that's the other part of this whole issue is the whole issue of the hybrids. I mean that's one that when we get into that aspect of it, we get into some things that really stretches people's worlds beyond very often where they want them to be stretched. But it follows, even logically, it follows that if extraterrestrials have been here for as long as they have, and they have, and that there were, there have been ancient civilizations on this planet that have been destroyed a long time ago, such as Atlantis. And there's lots of evidence of extraterrestrial involvement here in terms of all the ancient structures that are all over the planet that the human beings can't find any reasonable explanation for in terms of, there's only one way they could have gotten there, and that's with some sort of outside factor. But there are also many, many theories regarding that the extraterrestrials did, in fact, interbreed with humans, way, 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 way back when, forming these various strains of hybrids, part ET genetics, part human genetics. And I believe a very compelling case can be made that the entire white race is such a genetic hybrid. I believe we in the white race basically, at least part of our genetic strain, if we ever understand it completely, will in fact trace off planet. And I think that that's again, there's a lot of evidence for that too. There's a lot of people that believe that a lot of the so-called indigenous people who are privy to such incredible forms of ancient wisdom, like the Maya. There are those who believe, that the Maya were in fact, extraterrestrially seeded. And that they were part of Atlantis, and then when Atlantis crumbled, there were certain factions of the ruling class in that world that knew of the impending changes, and they basically escaped. They got out, and they moved to other places and started up again there, such as in Central America and in Mexico, where the Maya popped up. And so that is yet another possibility. So
we're going to have to do another show, Jack. That's all there is to it, because
are
there's
we,
so
are we
much
the end
more
already?
To talk. And we really are at the end.
Okay.
So do me a favor, give out your website and tell the people where they can get your book.
Okay. Well, this really zoomed by here today, didn't it? You're good too, Nancy. You made me feel very, very at ease very, very quickly here. My website, people can find anything they need to know about any of the things we've talked about here tonight, my books, my DVDs, all that stuff, a lot of free videos, and then all kinds of other goodies. I've got a wonderful website, www.jackallis.com, jackallis.com. I invite you to visit. Please subscribe to my newsletter. I really like to stay connected with people, and I just send out one monthly newsletter, that's all, not a lot of junk, no jokes, no porn, nothing like that. Just a monthly newsletter, and I invite people to subscribe to that. And And I thank you, Nancy. This was a wonderful hour
here.
You're
very welcome. Like I said, we'll have you back on. We'll go into a lot more talking about, you know, what we didn't get to talk about today. But we'll do that. It'll probably be a couple months, and then we'll bring you back on, Jack. That's okay.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
Great. Well, thank you for taking the time. Thank you for filling us in on a lot. And, folks, I did read the book. It is a good book. It will open your mind a little bit, so do take a look at it. So thank you, Jack, for the time.
Thank you. Good night.
You're very welcome. Good night. I also like to remind the listeners of my Wake Up Now conference. It's going to be going on in Albuquerque area April 29th through May 1st. So may God bless all of you. Have a great week, and take care. Bye now.